Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Coffee and Kettlebells. Today we're welcoming Toronto-based mother, nutritionist, author, and founder of the Academy of Culinary Nutrition, Megan Telpner. She's been featured in Forbes and ranked as one of the top 100 female entrepreneurs in Canada. She was also named Best Holistic Nutritionist in 2017 and 18 with National Nutrition. Congratulations on that. Megan, I love that you talk about incorporating cooking into your child's lives because it's something that, you know, I'm actively trying to do with my two children. I've got a third on the way. And as moms and entrepreneurs, we're both super busy, but we also know the importance of paying attention to what we're feeding our children. And so I know that cooking has had so many, you know, benefits, short and long term, incorporating that into your kids' lives. So we're certainly thrilled to pick your brain today and just get all the knowledge that we can when it comes to nutrition and family. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. So talk to us a little bit, you know, about your background. I know you have extensive experience in nutrition and the wellness world. But talk to us how you got interested in that life.
Yes. I didn't grow up having a passion for cooking in any way. I had no interest in nutrition at all. I studied fashion and design and marketing and worked in those fields early in my career, and then developed, I was diagnosed with an autoimmune inflammatory bowel disease. I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease in 2006. And to this day, there's no solution, permanent solution in conventional medicine. And so at that point, I realized that I needed to figure some things out. And one of them was discover the room in my apartment called the kitchen and learn how to cook. And I knew that despite what I'd been told by doctors, I knew somewhere in me intuitively that what we eat and what I was going to eat was going to affect the trajectory of this diagnosis and of my life. Mm-hmm. And so that was really what inspired me to take an interest in health and nutrition and start cooking. And my experience, and it wasn't just the food, there was other changes I made in my lifestyle, but that I was able to resolve this health condition and have remained symptom free now going on 14 years. And so it was after that experience that I was like, I got to figure out what I just did. And that was what inspired me to take a more formal approach and study holistic nutrition and catapulted me into the work that I've been doing now for over 12 years.
That's incredible. And so let's kind of shift into, you know, you are a mom. So talk to us a little bit about when you brought a child into this world, like, what is your main priority when it comes to teaching your kid about nutrition and teaching them, you know, how to maybe have a good relationship with food, but also like a balanced relationship with food?
Right. Well, my son is 2.5, and him being in the kitchen started when he was a day or two old. He's always been in the kitchen with us, and whether before he was conscious of it or not, we were cooking and talking about food and cooking different foods. And so as soon as he was eating solids, he was eating as similarly to what my husband and I eat for meals as possible. So we were seasoning, you know, even when it was just sweet potato purees, we were seasoning those with turmeric and different spices to really broaden his palate. And then when he started eating more solids, we didn't go to traditional baby foods of, you know, pablum or rice cereal. We went to pureed meats and broth and really looking at the nutrient density in every bite of food we were giving him. Mm-hmm. And so now he's 2.5 and he goes to drop-ins and play dates and he has all that. And so far, he doesn't question the food we pass for him and that we take with him. And we're pretty uncompromising about it at this point because we still have that complete control over what he eats. And he gets delicious food. He gets what to him are sweet treats. Like we make him what he calls cookies that are blended up nuts and some dried fruit and coconut oil, and we shape them like cookies, and he's more than happy with those, and that's a special treat to him. We make him Jell-O using actual gelatin and pureed fruit. So for him, that's another delicious treat. And so part of what we've done with him, and now he's, you know, talking and he helps cook in the kitchen. He has different jobs he does with different meals. But we also explain and talk about the food as we're using it. So he gets to know the vegetables. He gets to know the things that go in his smoothie and why they're good for us. And so there's always this sort of curiosity and excitement about what we're preparing. And he, you know, he's also a regular toddler. He does not go for every single meal we make, but we also don't then offer up, you know, the typical cheese sandwich or noodles or, you know, a lot of the things that often parents get trapped with their kids being like, they'll only eat this now.
Yeah.
I have no doubt he'll love pasta when he starts eating it regularly, but let's not push that ahead too quickly.
Right. And I've actually learned too, in prior podcasts that I've done, is it really takes several exposures to food for them to actually like maybe want to try it. So if they don't like something right away, that doesn't mean they're not going to like it forever, right? So just to continue to offer it, continue to expose them around different foods, and, you know, eventually they're going to maybe want to try it. And maybe they still don't like it, but they at least will try it.
Yeah, I mean, we've had times where we give him a food, like, let's use broccoli as an example, and he will not touch it. He doesn't want it on his plate. And then the next time we have it, and I don't even give him any, and he'll ask for some, and he'll eat it, and the next time he won't eat it. And so we don't attach anything to a previous behavior when it comes to food. We cook what we're going to have for dinner, and he'll usually eat most of what's available. And if there's a few things he doesn't want, we just don't push it, and maybe he will the next time. And I've also gotten really good at hiding things. So we make him like a macaroni and cheese that has some elbow noodles in it. They're gluten-free rice pasta, but we'll puree cauliflower into a cashew cheese sauce, or we'll steam butternut squash and mash that in. And so he's getting all the goods, doesn't even know it. And then later that night, we actually have a vegetable book we read with him when he's on the potty, and we'll go through all the vegetables he had that day. He's like, did I have this, mommy? And I'll be like, yeah, that was mixed in with your cheese sauce. And then, you know, so he gets to know it, and there's really no drama or stress around him eating or not eating something. It's just like you and I, like, I don't always feel like eating cauliflower, or, you know, so we have different meals on different nights. And so we just extend that sort of same respect to him.
Yeah. And I love how you incorporate like the education piece to it as well, you know, because when kids can feel like they're part of the conversation, or they can feel like they're part of the decision of what they're eating, and really fully understand, because this is the stage where like curiosity is at an all-time high. I mean, I have a 4-year-old, and so she wants to know like why for everything, right? And so it's important to be able to like articulate that in a way that it's teaching them what that food can do for them and for their body and the way that it makes them feel.
We bought this when our son was getting sort of more physically capable of doing things. We bought a learning tower, which a lot of people, I've seen like IKEA hacks for them. It's basically a little platform that lets our son stand at counter height with us. We can see everything that's going on.
I have one of those too. I love it.
I honestly can't imagine being able to cook every night without that, because with that, he's able to join in. He'll, you know, tear the lettuce or slice the mushrooms, and we got a little wooden knife for him. But he also, while we're in that process, he'll eat things while we're prepping things that he maybe wouldn't necessarily eat when we actually plate it and sit down at the dinner table. So it's also offered this opportunity for him to try things without sort of any commitment of having to eat a full portion of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about your books. You've written 2 books so far, one being Undiet, Eat Your Way to Vibrant Health, which was a number 1 on Amazon's bestseller. So congratulations. That's very impressive. So let's touch a little touch a little bit on what this book is all about and, you know, why has it been number 1? What do you think it is that's really capturing that audience, and how is it, you know, adding value to their lives?
Having been in the nutrition field now for so long, it's been really interesting watching the different dietary trends and fads and different paradigms come and go in the last decade plus. And with my books on diet and the philosophy around everything that I do, even with the Academy of Culinary Nutrition, it's not pushing one diet on people. It's not pushing any type of caloric restriction or any set of rules that are like, you must eat this way if you want to be healthy. And what I've done with my work is really aim to empower and educate everybody who seeks my guidance on how they can become the ultimate best health expert for themselves. And so with Undiet, we're breaking away from the dietary rules that we think we're supposed to follow, but that have never actually worked or served anybody. So it's not counting calories, it's not grams of protein and fat and carbs, because the average person isn't doing, you know, heavy endurance training where that's even necessary.
Right.
The average person just wants to eat their meals and feel good and feel satiated and have energy through the day and then sleep at night. So if we can achieve just that and take that calculator off the plate, it automatically eliminates a lot of the stress and the worry. Mm-hmm. And the benefit is that when you start tuning into how you feel after you eat meals, and you're eating meals that are rich in good fats and that are varied in flavor and varied in ingredients, and you feel that satiation, you're less inclined to need to or desire overeating or having to really, really restrict portion control. Portion control becomes an issue when your meal's out of balance, when it's heavily salted or heavily sweet, when there isn't enough good fat or protein in it, so you're just burning through those carbs and feeling hungry very quickly after having the blood sugar fluctuation and crash. And so with Undiet, it's really just broken that system apart and lets people reclaim ownership over what they want to eat, and shares how to cook really simple, really delicious meals from whole foods or from scratch, and then pushes the importance of, you know, sitting at a table intended for dining, like eating at a table and having conversation and finding enjoyment in the process. And all these things that have been lost in, you know, our frenzied, quickened pace that we're currently living life.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, I'm going to make sure to link that that book right on our show notes, because I just love your philosophy and I 100% agree with it. And I think we're there's so many of us out there searching for the one diet that's going to, like, help and fix, and, you know, the one-size-fits-all approach, and what's working over here with my friend. Like, they just want to jump on what everybody else is doing, right? And it's really just about making it simple for us, because if things aren't simple in our lives, we're not going to stick with it. And you want to make sure that you're incorporating lifestyle changes that are just that, lifestyle, right? Not just this temporary fix, and then when you're done with it, you revert back to the old habits that got you there in the first place.
Yes, and so what I aim to do is to really educate on the reasons behind the recommendations being made or the decisions being made, because, you know, you mentioned earlier when you were asking about how I'm feeding my son and keeping it balanced, like that we're not going to extremes, but there's also certain things that when you know the why behind decisions that, you know, forcing or inhibiting or prohibiting or completely eliminating certain foods doesn't seem that extreme. It's just the way it is because of the conscious thought going into the food. So for example, like we won't buy conventional candy bars from sort of those big manufacturing chocolate companies, not just because of the sugar and the other crap that's in them, but because of how that chocolate is grown and harvested and the implications of that on the people who grow it. And so that's one example mm-hmm. of, you know, suddenly that candy bar is not so sweet anymore and it just loses its appeal. And what we found is that there are better options for pretty much everything. Mm-hmm. You know, there's better cereal options. There's better cracker options. There's better, even if you want the prepackaged snack, like they don't necessarily have to be in the shape of goldfish for your kid to eat them, and they'll still be delicious and they're full of healthful ingredients that don't have food dyes that mm-hmm. like the literature has shown affects behavior.
Yeah.
And so it all, like once you start to understand that in a, you know, in a non, like, challenging way, like in a way that's like, oh yes, this actually, this makes sense. And maybe this is something I need to consider. And when you can approach it from that perspective, the decisions become really, really easy. And the consistency of it becomes almost like a non-negotiable, effortless change in your life. That just, okay, this is just how it's going to be from now on. And there's no feelings of lack or loss or missing out when you take it from that approach.
Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of my listeners are moms. And, you know, I think what's probably most challenging is allowing your kids to live a certain lifestyle or certain foods into their diet, and then now we're learning about those harmful benefits or those harmful ingredients like the dyes, you know, and the artificial sugars. So what would be your advice just through your work for moms that do have those kids that maybe they did eat the goldfish and that's what they were accustomed to, and now you're ready to make this household change in your life, in your kids' lives? What would be your advice for switching those things out and kind of dealing with the kids that are like, no, I want the goldfish. I don't like these because they're not shaped goldfish.
I think that we have to first empower ourselves with the information so we feel confident in sharing it. And I think you can't underestimate the intelligence of your kids either. I mean, I have a 2.5-year-old, so he's not 4, he's not 6, he's not 9. He can't fully talk back to me right at this point, but he, right, however, does understand when we explain things to him. And, you know, with him, we don't say no, no, no. It's just, that's not for Finley is how we phrase it.
Okay.
And so far he's fine with it. Mm-hmm. But so when you have that and you're trying to now make a switch with old patterns, the first thing is to get that consistency going at home. So if you just don't buy it, it's not in the house. Mm-hmm. If your kid's going to go to a friend's house and have it, that's your decision. If you want them to have that when they're out, maybe you're okay with it, but it's just not something you have in your home. It's not something they're snacking on when they come home from school, and it's not something you're packing for them to take. So it becomes, you know, the decision of the parent what will go on in the home. And so transitioning to that is a challenge for sure. But the most important thing is to be consistent with it so that, and I think we know this in general, raising kids, like they're really good with routines, with nothing that's unexpected, with, mm-hmm, with, you know, having a little bit of structure, and that discipline is what allows them to feel a little safer and secure and a little freer, that, you know, they know the structure within which they are living. So I think that if we can be consistent at home, first and foremost is super important. And then if there's a certain treat they get under a certain circumstance, then, you know, they acknowledge that that's when they get that thing, or when they go to a friend's house, or, you know, if there is a birthday party, you let them have whatever it is they want at that one event. And then at home, though, you're not serving the same things all the time.
Yeah. I think that's going to
be really,
advice,
really key.
Yeah. And like you said, it's the consistency too. Like, don't give in. You got this. Don't give in. You know, don't buy it.
Yeah.
Just because they're begging for it.
Yeah, and a lot of it too, quite honestly, is I think a lot of parents also like to say, well, my kids really want this. It's like, well, are you the one always buying it though? Like, are you, mm-hmm, the one sometimes snacking on it too?
True.
And I think some parents, like, actually it's their own inconsistencies that are translating, which is sometimes hard to hear, but hear it from me, and then you can be annoyed with me, and then you'll think about it, and then maybe it'll inspire a change. But, you know, like the chips or like the cookies or the late night snacks. I used to actually work one-on-one with clients earlier in my career, and I had someone say that my kids love a square of chocolate before bed. It's like, well, how who introduced your 6 and 8-year-old to a square of chocolate before bed? And so sometimes it's sort of our own habits that, you know, we enjoy so much that we've introduced to our kids that is maybe not the most optimal. And so it's sometimes our own work that we have to do first before we start, you know, bugging our kids to change their habits.
Yeah. It's that gut check that we have to have. All right. So let's shift gears a little bit. You know, we're recording this podcast. It's January now. And so of course there's lots out there about the cleansing and the detoxing because, you know, holiday eating has just come and gone. So let's talk a little bit about your mindset on detoxing And do we really need to do it after the holidays? So let's talk about that and around the stigma about like feeling like people need to detox after they've maybe indulged over the holidays.
That's such a great question. So it was, my husband and I actually have a podcast called the Today's Day Podcast. And the very first episode, maybe it was episode two, was that answering that question, do we really need to detox? And it was more of a general thing about, you know, the charcoal lemonade and the, and all the, you know, all the trends we see that are supposed to help us detox. So after the holiday period, I think it's definitely great that there is a general spirit of motivation that people want to be like, okay, I got to clean up my act. But what I always look at is, you know, doing it for 1 month to say, I think they have like a dry January, or they do like, there's these different sort of things that trend around. Like doing that for a month to maybe clean up the last 2 or 3 months is nice, but even better is not taking that cartwheel off the wagon in the first place, if that's possible, to not completely throw out all of your goals and your regular habits. But if you have, I think what's really important is to first look at the things you know that really need changing, but try and find ways to put them into your life that are actually sustainable and maintainable. So you're not looking at a 1 month cleanse or a 1 month detox or a 1 week detox or a 7 day no sugar challenge, which I also greatly support, but I always look at how do we create the lasting changes. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you want to cut out sugar and alcohol for a week, that's an amazing challenge. And what you'll find when you reintroduce things like sugar back into the diet is that you've resensitized yourself to it and you actually don't need as much sweetness, whether it's in the form of, you know, actual sugar or like a honey or maple syrup. You don't actually need as much to get that sweet taste. So that can be a really powerful thing to sort of give yourself a reset. But if we're really looking to detox in a real way, like get the heavy metals out of the body and really clean things up, it's going to be more than just, you know, cleaning up the diet for a few weeks. We're going to be looking at cleaning up our personal care products, our home cleaning products, and looking at how we can start or actually stop the process of retoxing. If we stop bringing it in, we don't need to worry so much of how to get it all out.
Yeah, absolutely. And yes, I get it. Like over the holidays, you do have, you know, a little bit more temptation, whether it's people bringing things in your office or, you know, gifts or holiday parties. But I love your approach of like, what can we do that's just true lifestyle changes that don't make us feel like we've got to detox right away?
Yeah. And like, I mean, I know that over the holidays, like I indulged in a lot more and I would never say what I indulged in. People are like, oh my God, give me a break. Like that's not that bad. And I know this, but it's different than my, what I call a set point. And so we have these set points, which is really how we operate on a day-to-day level, and sometimes we dip below that set point and, you know, allow ourselves certain things, and sometimes we aim to rise above. So after the new year, we're trying to increase that set point. We're trying to raise it higher, raise the bar for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then usually it comes back to our usual place. Mm-hmm. And so optimally what we want to do is in the new year, set new habits that elevate that set point, and then we don't feel the same desires to dip as low as maybe we have in the past. So like I know that I'm personally working on a few things this month that I'm working on actually extending into life long term, that just sort of, you know, having that opportunity for a reset can be really, really helpful. But yeah, we really just want to look at, you know, how do I live healthfully and optimally, truly, like not with like ditching the excuses and being really honest about it. And how do I make this a priority and make this sustainable so that ultimately what I think we all want is to feel good, to wake up feeling good, to not have aches and pains, to not have indigestion, to not have chronic headaches or PMS symptoms, to not have the stuff that's become normal. And that comes not from a week or a month long detox. That comes from making decisions every day to promote health in the body and in the mind and spirit and in our life and in our relationships.
Absolutely. Well, I feel like we've covered, you know, a couple really, really great things, but I'd love to end the podcast today with three questions that I love to ask all of my guests. So, you know, with so many different health trends, which we've kind of touched on this, but with so many different health trends, what is your number one piece of advice for someone who is just overwhelmed with all the information and just trying to figure out what is right for them?
Great question. I would say skip the trends and consider the things that you could see yourself doing in 20 years.
Yes.
So that will scratch off most of the trends. That'll scratch off the daily celery juicing. That'll scratch off the charcoal lemonades. It'll scratch off a lot of the things that are very popular. And instead, what you'll be left with is eating unprocessed food, drinking lots of water, moving the body, getting enough sleep every night is really important. You know, having those moments of relaxation, getting outside in nature. The health has become so complicated because it's a massive business. But like 90% of what keeps us healthy, we already know. Mm-hmm. Like we all already know what we need to be doing. We just need to do more of it.
Right. And not focus on the things that just really aren't practical for our lifestyle. Focus on the simple things that you know you can incorporate on a daily basis.
Yeah, there's no, I wish there was like the one thing you have to start doing today, yeah. but the reality is that there's no magic one thing that everyone on the planet needs to do for optimal health. Mm-hmm. We all have, like, if everyone listening, you're like, oh, I know there's the one thing I need to start doing. That's the thing to do. Like, yeah. Whatever it is you just thought of, that's what you need to start doing.
Absolutely. All right, second question. If someone were to add or eliminate one habit today, what would it be?
Oh, my goodness. If someone were to add a habit, I would say find 5 to 10 minutes a day to take some deep breaths, and whether you want to meditate and focus on your breath or start listing off the things that are bringing you joy in that day, but a commitment to finding some space in between life to appreciate what is all around us is powerful beyond what we can conceptualize. So I would say pick up that habit. And if you could drop a habit, I don't know. I think gossiping is one, and it's not a direct consumptive one, but I think it falls, you know, with the idea of gossip also includes comparing, competing on social media and judging. And, you know, we're just inundated with so much messaging. And if we can just really sort of focus on the goodness in our life and the goodness in the people around us, that's profoundly powerful in changing our attitude and our approach in the day.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. All right, last one. How do you keep yourself moving forward with a healthy lifestyle, even on the days that you feel unmotivated?
Another great question. I think for me, because I got into this field the way I did, you know, with my own health crisis, every day for me is an opportunity to continue on the healing path. I don't think we ever reach that ultimate place of optimal health. And so I think what's really important for all of us to do, and what I do every day, is sort of to tune in and pay attention to what I need in that day, not sort of, well, this was what my goal was, or I wanted to achieve this today or this week, but really, you know, what do I need today that will make me feel good? That will truly make me feel good.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much again for joining us today. And if our listeners want to hear more from you, where can they find you? Share about anything, your podcast. Let's make sure we get all of it out there so they can get a hold of you.
Absolutely. So I am at megantelpner.com online. I have a weekly blog I write, and I'm also on Instagram at Megan Telpner. My school, the Academy of Culinary Nutrition, offers a 14-week certification in culinary nutrition. We have levels for people who want to take them with personal interest, as well as people who want to kickstart or ignite an existing career in the health and wellness field. And that's all at culinarynutrition.com. And our podcast I do with my husband, who's a functional medicine practitioner, is called the Today is the Day podcast. Our second season launches in March, so there's time to catch up on past episodes. And your audience might really enjoy the episode called How to Raise an Adventurous Eater, where we're sharing everything we know about food introduction and transitioning families to healthier ways of eating and living. And so, yeah, that's on wherever you listen to podcasts. You'll find it under the Today's Day podcast.
Awesome. And we will make sure to link all that in the show notes so you guys can go directly to those pages. But thanks again so much for joining us today. Really appreciate it. Guys, go follow her. Lots of good stuff over on Instagram as well. And thanks for listening today.
Thank you so much for having me, Morgan.
All right. Bye-bye.